This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love. And we're here to help. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Hello and happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the podcast. We are coming in hot as always. There's been a lot of discussion. There's more discussion now. I didn't think you and I could talk more. But somehow with Hooked on Driving, we talk even more. It's a thing.
We managed. We are headed to Laguna Seca this weekend for our first Hooked on Driving event as new owners.
I'm pretty excited, actually. I'm very excited.
I am very excited, too. That is March 9th and 10th, and we are announcing a Cars and Coffee on Sunday morning, March 10th, 2024, from 9 to 11 in the main paddock. Bring your favorite non-alcoholic beverage. Come join us. Come say hello.
Yep.
Whether or not you're on track. But just know, as of this recording, there is still Sunday track time left.
Yeah,
Saturday sold out, but Sunday still has room. Go to hookedondriving.com to sign up, and we would love to see you with this Cars and Coffee.
It'd be
just
cool.
Come hang out, watch the people who are on track. We'll talk about cars.
It's not supposed to cost you anything. I'm just letting you know. You're going to get to the main entrance of Laguna Seca. You will have to sign the track paperwork to get on track. They shouldn't charge you to enter. If they do, let us know. But they shouldn't charge you to enter. You can roll on down to the paddock. We'll see you there. It'll be very cool. It's going to be really informal, but really fun to just see everybody and also be there while people are running the track. It's a cool track to be around, so we look forward to seeing you then.
We've had some interesting news come across our plate here regarding Nissan in advanced talks to invest in electric vehicle manufacturer Fisker.
Okay.
According to Reuters, a March 1st, 2024 article written by Abirep Roy and Orihiko Shorzao. I'm sure I mispronounced their names, and I apologize for that. However, they are talking about this deal with Nissan investing in Fisker, and we had a question over here on Instagram asking, actually, about Nissan. Drive to Run says, with the rumor of Nissan partnering and making a big investment in Fisker, which legacy automakers do we think would be best to pair with, like Rivian or Lucid if needed? Mm. Maybe BMW with Rivian or Stellantis with Lucid. And the point here is, Nissan doesn't have much of a infrastructure, I don't think. I think they're looking at this potential partnership as Fisker having all the investment in EVs.
Mm-hmm.
They could use some symbiotic manufacturing and technology partner sharing there.
For sure. And look, I'm going to overstate my point. I know what I'm about to say sounds really damning.
Go too far and then pull it back. Go blue sky.
What I'm about to say sounds really damning, but this feels like two drowning people grabbing each other.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Gosh.
But Fisker is not doing well, and Nissan is not doing great. So this feels like a really interesting pairing of brands. I mean, what typically happens here, and back to the question there about who snaps up Lucid, who snaps up Rivian. You know, Rivian is independent. Lucid is funded by Saudi Arabia. So does Saudi Arabia want to sell out? I don't know. Saudi Arabia is interesting about their optics.
It is all
they
about
like,
optics.
They like
right.
to present themselves one way while they're over here doing something that you hear about. And you go, wait, they're doing that?
Oh my
gosh. Isn't that against some sort of convention? There's a whole thing. Saudi Arabia is known for this. I hate to say it, but historically that's the case.
Such the corporate buzzword. There's a lot of optics on the project.
Seriously.
From the vice president on down. So you better do a good job on this project.
So here's Saudi Arabia, obviously a very serious oil nation.
Yes.
That is now funding with a blank check. And probably the most high-end EV company.
Pretty
so
much.
Would they even want to sell out? Is that the wrong optics? But I could see Rivian getting snatched up by somebody because they've struggled along, but they may survive. But Fisker's not doing well. And I hate to say this as well. This is Henrik Fisker's second attempt at making an EV car company.
Yeah.
So there was Fisker before that had the Fisker Karma that then was bought as the Karma brand by a Chinese company and was re-released. And I've actually seen a recent one on the road not too long ago and was jaw-dropped. So that exists. But then this leads us into our topic Tuesday where we're going to talk from Matt Wong about how a car release is determined. And I'm going to circle back to this in a few minutes when we talk about that. But Nissan's in an interesting spot because they are not spending much money to remake their cars. But because of product cycles, they need to remake all their vehicles. And if you've watched the news from Nissan in the last 2 years, they've had this big splashy thing with Brie Larson, you know, the Marvel's Captain Marvel driving around in Nissans, inexplicably, by the way. I have no idea.
Why did Captain Marvel choose an Aria?
Well, and I have no idea why she's the spokesperson.
Yeah, I can't figure that one out either.
I can't understand the branding. Separate thing. But
was she like...
I don't know.
15th on the list?
I don't know.
The first 14 people were like, nope.
But even if she was first on the list, I don't understand the synergy. And no offense to her, I just don't understand how Brie Larson's like, oh, there's our ambassador. I just don't get it. Separate thing. They had this big thing when she started doing the commercials where they were showing like 15 new cars they were releasing. But if you drill down, what they've done is they are essentially taking the chassis and the workings and the engines from the stuff they already have, and they're making new improved versions. And you and I have seen a good version of that in the Nissan Frontier that we think is improved. When you drill down, it's the chassis of the prior one. It's engines they already had on the shelf. New bodywork, but there's very little new going on there. And so I think it's interesting that Nissan is grasping for new with Fisker, who's grasping to survive. How does this land? I have no call here. I can't for the life of me guess how this is going to go.
Reuters article says the terms being discussed include Nissan investing more than $400 million in Fisker's truck platform and building Fisker's planned Alaska pickup in 2026 at one of the U.S. assembly plants. I like how Fisker is just throwing darts. What should we name our next vehicle? They've got the Ocean, the Pear, and the Alaska. The off-roader is going to be called the Toilet Brush, and their street version is going to be like, what, the Lamppost? Like, you're just randomly choosing names out of a dictionary to name. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, somebody in their legal department is figuring out what's currently not trademarked.
What's left?
That we can have. What outdoor vague space can we claim? And I think it's hysterical that nobody has done the Alaska yet for a car. I mean, we've got the Telluride and many other things, Colorado, but Alaska seems obvious. But I'm sorry, if I'm going to picture what is, just all of you listening, just take a minute. Unless you're driving, close your eyes. If you're driving, please don't close your eyes.
Don't close your eyes.
Imagine what the Alaska pickup looks like. My money is it's not an EV.
I'm thinking it has tank treads on it, too.
Seriously, Alaska pickup is not an EV with Henrik Fisker styling rolling through Beverly Hills. It's not.
No, it's not. There's a lot of good Alaska names to capitalize on, car Soldatna. Manufacturers. There's Inupiaq and a lot of Native American kinds of towns and names. It's a gold mine up there.
And you can actually have a car called the Homer.
Somebody has to build the Homer.
You can actually build the Homer because that is an actual city in Alaska.
I've been to Homer many times.
Mm-hmm. But Juno, Ketchikan, I mean, come on. There's some cool names up there.
And by the way,
cars for all of them.
The residents of Homer pride themselves on being quirky.
Yes, they do.
They like that. And they've got the Homer Simpson Homer. And
I know. This is what I'm saying.
Oh,
the Homer.
Really good. I'm just really intrigued by Fisker kind of drowning. I mean, they haven't really caught fire. And I guess the business model is to create a car company, make a big splash, set up a little bit of manufacturing, and then throw your hands up and shriek for help. And maybe some car company comes along and bails you out, and you still walk away profitable as an individual.
Yeah.
The car company gets renamed and absorbed and crushed. And
it's what happened to Fisker
the last
time.
Never heard of again.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the secret.
This is where you
success.
And I missed the boat. You could
totally
have been
did.
Designing. I could have been, I don't know what I would do to the process. But anyway, the point is.
You would make a cool movie about it.
I guess I would be making the commercial for how awesome the, I don't know what it's called is.
Yes.
Clearly the Homer. We're going to make the Homer. We're going to sell that brand to some investor. And then we're going to walk away with cash in pockets.
Yes. It's clear that these startups, they've got big ambitions, but they need a lot of cash. How much cash? I just read a Financial Times article saying that Apple threw just about $10 billion into development of their Project Titan car, and they wasted so much time and money because they couldn't decide on what to build. I'm sure there were too many cooks in the kitchen. Too many Tim Cooks?
Nice. To your point, too many Tim Cooks in the kitchen.
See what I did
there?
To
your point, though, I bet you there are some cool sketches that were close to finalized.
I bet you.
And I bet the problem is they probably had one that was a car, one that was an SUV, and they couldn't agree which way to go.
Absolutely.
So let's see those sketches. Those will come out in a coffee table book that'll cost $1,000 in 10 years.
Yes, and Apple will sell it on the website.
It'll come with an accompanying app.
Yes.
Where you can scan your coffee table book and somebody pops up in your Apple Pro glasses and talks to you about the I've just given Apple an entire list of ideas.
Maybe they
that they're
can
gonna charge a fortune for
some of that $10 billion
lost. It's gone. That's a tire fire out back. In their new tire-shaped HQ, there's a tire fire in the
That's
center.
Right.
It's the cash of
You're
the electric
right.
build.
It is tire-shaped.
This is Just throw some more money on the cash fire that is Titan.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine how much space technology Apple could have done with $10 billion?
They could have had their own like cargo ships to the moon.
They could build a launch pad in the middle of the circle. It could just be the new launch area. I'm having too much fun with Apple ideas right now. Let's do it.
Shoot, they could build an Apple store on the moon and shuttles to fly people there so you could say you bought your laptop in space or something.
You could, yes. Mm-hmm. Forget the Apple Air. Or the MacBook Air. It's the Apple Space.
Don't you want
the MacBook Space?
I want the space.
I don't know what that does. It's probably perforated somewhere. It's like holes through it for some unknown reason, but it still works.
And it's twice as expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We're very excited to announce a new partnership with Battery Tender. If you park your car for any length of time, you need it to start. The last thing you want to hear is the labored whine of a dead battery. That's why you need a Battery Tender battery charger to properly maintain the battery in your vehicle to give it long life and quick starts every time. We're already customers. We use Battery Tender battery chargers on all of our cars year-round and especially through the snowy winter months of Park City.
Since 1965, Deltran Battery Tender has been the leader in battery chargers. Their BTP microprocessor technology and quick connect convenience automatically maintains the batteries in all your vehicles, lead acid, AGM, or lithium. Keep all your batteries in top condition. Visit BatteryTender.com and find the right product for you, including battery chargers, jump starters, inverters, and more. Plus, as our listeners, you can use the code EVERYDAY to get 10% off your order at BatteryTender.com. We're back with a Topic Tuesday that doesn't actually have anything to do with Apple in space, but we're going to try to bring it back down to earth. Matt is writing in and saying, how are car releases determined? And what got him thinking about this is he was watching our commentary and our coverage of the Nismo Z. And our big takeaway was we were talking about, and I said it multiple times, that the Nismo is the Z car I wanted.
Yeah.
That when I drove the base Z, I was just disappointed. And I drove the Nismo and I was like, well, here we go. Now, back to what I said earlier, this is built on the 370Z chassis. In fact, it has the same chassis code as the 370Z.
Stop making logical sense.
Okay. It has engines.
It's too much.
It has an engine out of the Red Sport Infiniti.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a really cool engine looking for a cool car. Well, let's put that in the Z car.
Yeah.
So it's still a parts bin car. It has styling from, frankly, all of the Zs. They just put them all on the wall and said, we need to include all of that. And some poor designer was like, all of it, really?
Yes. This is the problem with CEOs. You give them option A through E or A through F. Uh-huh. And they say, could we take a little bit of option A and a little bit of option D? Mm-hmm. And I like that front of option A. And could we meld them into option
A.1? Mm-hmm. So problematic. But then with this Nismo, they made a good version. He said, so hang on a second. He feels like, why did they release the base car at all instead of releasing the Nismo version first and building excitement with the Nismo version, and then they follow with the base version after? He feels like that would have made more sense and gotten more excitement going on. He also feels like if they'd done that, they could have maybe waited and had a manual Nismo Z available at launch. The discussion is that the manual can't handle the horsepower and torque of the Nismo. Now, I want to stop there for a second. I've heard this. Maybe it's true. But I'm going to go back to logic and scare me for a second. Because the bump from the base to the Nismo, it's not like it doubled. It didn't even go up 50%. The horsepower bump is 20.
Oh, I thought you were talking about dollars here.
No. The horsepower.
So I was like, dollars is a different story.
No, dollars is terrifying. It's a 70-something thousand-dollar car.
Yeah.
It's way too expensive.
Okay, yeah,
but,
horsepower.
But
yeah,
they're
yeah,
talking
yeah.
about they couldn't put the manual in it. This is apparently the Nissan corporate line because it couldn't handle the extra torque. It's 20 extra horsepower and like 30, 40 pound-feet of torque. I don't have the stat in front of me. I'm sorry. But my point is, it's not like, wow, that's a really big jump, which begs the question, how fragile is that gearbox?
Ooh.
Because we're talking about a turbo engine. So that means somebody's going to take the base car, if 1,000 people haven't already done it, and crank it up anyway. You're telling me the bump you created, which wasn't astronomical between the base and the Nismo, breaks the transmission?
You know, Matt, we like parts bin cars. We love parts bin cars, actually. Sometimes that makes the best, most unique recipe and most driver-focused, interesting, fun car to drive. And I'm with you. I said, this is the car Nissan should have built. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't build the base one.
Just don't even do
don't
it.
Don't even call it Nismo. Don't call it Nismo. Totally we don't care. Mm-hmm. Build this car and build two options of it. The automatic and manual transmission. Mm-hmm. Matt sees it a couple ways. But he thinks it could be debated between a financial decision on the part of Nissan, because base models will theoretically sell in higher numbers, or an emotional decision because Nismo is more fun. Matt says his personal hunch is that if they focused on the Nismo first, it would have been a manual at launch because they could have built a transmission capable of handling the additional torque and put it in the base model after.
I just looked it up. It's 34 more pound-feet of torque. You're telling
me
we're...
So it's 20 horsepower and 34 pound-feet of torque.
You're telling me we're 34 pound-feet of torque away from breakage on that transmission? Really? Anyway, side note.
Matt, we are still in very much this different time of cars. And that is the post-COVID era of supplier shortages of all kinds of parts. But we're also in that post-Ghosn era where all the money they paid Carlos Ghosn is long gone.
It's long gone with him.
Yes,
he
it
left
is.
In a piano box. I wish I was kidding. It sounds like a joke.
It was like a speaker
He left
box.
In a piano box.
It was like for speakers.
Yes, it was like a concert piano box or something, and they rolled him onto a cargo plane. The guy left the country. It sounds like I'm making it up. That's why I like repeating it, because it's so insane.
The documentary is awesome. I watched the documentary, which is great. But they're still reeling from nobody driving the bus and too many people wanting to drive the bus, and then corporate cultures from France and from Japan competing to see who is going to be the new person making the decisions. And I think that's what's causing them a lot of problems, and it's forced them to look at all of their models and just make incremental improvements rather than completely new chassis and redesigning everything. But having a new model does not necessarily mean you have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't have to say, the last one sucked. We have to build a completely new chassis with completely new tooling and completely new engineering and testing. And that is such a huge undertaking.
Well, we've joked about it before.
To do that
this is
good.
The Porsche way. The 911 has been through what? I think 3-4 chassis in 60 years.
Yeah.
Because why would we change it? And when they make a new chassis, all the 911 purists go, "What are you doing?" And then for every other manufacturer, if they don't make a new chassis, we all go, "What are you doing?"
Exactly.
It's the weird Porsche blind spot thing happening. But I'm going to go another way, Matt, and that is, I think that the extra performance versions, you've mentioned this before, Paul, I think design-wise, the design might end up getting done first of the extra performance versions, the hot one, the one you can't have.
The designers were sketching it on their free time before they even announced the car.
Somebody's jumping up and down on the corner going, "I made the race car. I made the race car."
Totally.
Because why wouldn't they?
Check out my cool sketch.
But let's take the GR Corolla for a minute. The Corolla came out. There was no GR Corolla. There wasn't even a rumor of a GR Corolla. The Corolla came out, and then they take a known thing and they try to make it high performance. Engineers love that challenge. This is what you're working with. Make it high performance. And then we, you and I, sit in a briefing and hear about how many extra spot welds they have on the high performance version.
It's
because
many.
They took... Because
349, they took, everyone.
What, not 350.
No.
Not 350. 350 was the bridge too far. 349 is the number that's acceptable.
Three shall be the number of the counting, and the number of the counting shall be three.
Five is right out. My point is, they took something that was working and was making money for them, and then they made the high-performance version. And this is the financial way that makes sense to auto manufacturers. It's not the way that gets the rest of us excited. We want to see the flashy sports car with the wing on it first in a cool color.
Yes.
And then decide that the only one we can afford is the gray one with half as much horsepower. That's the way the world really works. But at the same time, what ends up happening is Mustang, the latest Mustang release, which also is built on the bones of the prior car. Think about that for a second.
That's what we do here.
For the same reasons, because we got to figure out savings here. We talk about it in our piece with the GR Supra and the Nismo and the Dark Horse. We talk about how difficult it is to make a dedicated sports car right now and why this stuff's getting reused. But what I think is interesting about the recent Mustang, though, the last Mustang, the GT350 wasn't right out front.
No.
It was the EcoBoost and the GT, and we went along with those for a while, and then here came the GT350. This version, they introduced them all at one time, from the lowly EcoBoost to the big new, what is it, the GTD?
The Daytona version.
They released them all at once, like, come get your Mustang, which is rare.
Yes.
Because the other way to do it is more common, the way that Nissan did it, which is here's your base model. Oh, you want the sexy one, the hot one? That's coming later.
Yes. And what you're talking about is something that every car manufacturer has done throughout the ages. And that is, Porsche is a great example, BMW, anybody. You introduce the car, and then as that generation matures, you introduce the higher horsepower and the hotter specs. So the last run of the last version of that car, this is the one you want. This is the hottest thing. We've developed it because cars continue to be developed and engineered and refined over time.
Yeah.
That's why there's a 997.1 and a 997.2 generation.
You're right.
That happens with practically every car company. You can, just because a car's on sale doesn't mean it's done.
True. Very good point.
It's still in development, despite the next generation being developed and thought about by a separate team at HQ. The current one is still under engineering and still being developed. New versions. We've got to keep this in the news. We've got to keep enthusiasts interested and hungry for this car. So that's not uncommon. Nissan has certainly followed that. But there's too many cooks in the kitchen. Maybe Tim Cook was in charge of Nissan, too.
Maybe. He's been cooking lots of stuff,
They couldn't decide whether to develop a manual. And if they determined that the manual in the base model couldn't handle this minimal horsepower and torque increase, then you did it wrong. They didn't think about this hotter generation needing the engineering to support it and not willing to spend the money, but maybe they didn't have the money to be able to do it. So they're in a very tight spot here and now asking 70 grand for a car that doesn't come with a manual. And that is an enthusiast hot car. I hope it sells, but I don't have very high hopes, which means Nissan's going to say, well, nobody's buying our car. We're not going to make that anymore.
That is the problem right there. You're absolutely right. If what the Nismo is was available at 50 and in a manual, I think it would be getting a lot more universal praise, and I think they would be able to sell them. But the problem is, right now what it's going to get is it's going to get people that are Nissan enthusiasts.
True.
People that are Z car people, and I am among them, okay?
But maybe Brie is. Maybe she owns a bunch of Z cars.
She may have a bunch of Zs. That and a bunch of Frontiers sitting in her warehouse somewhere.
Maybe a ton of Frontiers.
She's used all that Marvel's money.
Maybe
and
so.
And she's bought Nissan
products.
We just don't know. But the thing is, the places we go.
I know.
Anyway, but the thing is, that Z is also suffering from this problem, and that is it's being massively marked up because the dealers are getting this and going, ooh, this is special. We should mark it up, which kills it further.
Yes.
I've seen $30,000 and $50,000 markups on Z cars that you guys have sent us.
It's insane.
Think about 50 for a second. You're now I'm not good at math. I'm really not. This is a $120,000 Z car now if you take a $50,000 markup. It shouldn't be 70 to start. Now it's 120, and at 120, you're buying a base Z06. Mm. Think about that for a second. And at 70, you can buy a used standard C8, or you can buy a GR Corolla with, honestly, one of the better manuals being sold right now with money left over.
Yeah.
That's a terrible place for this car to be.
Look, Netherlands, we hear the listeners in Netherlands. Australia, we hear you guys too. You have written to us and said, look what I'm dealing with. And it's just the markup and the country's taxation rates are. We definitely feel your pain. And that is ongoing. I don't see that ending. But Nissan needs to really get their stuff together. Because I don't see, after releasing their corporate governance and saying, here's our 2030 goals. That was a few years ago. Things have changed even in the last 2 or 3 years dramatically.
Yeah.
And I don't see Nissan really responding to anything. I mean, we know they're a huge company, but there's a lot other bigger car companies on the planet that seem to be able to react more quickly to market conditions and driver and buying conditions and what the tastes for drivers are.
I'll give you one that completely baffles me as we're talking about comparisons to car companies. I'm going to give you three in this discussion real quick. Toyota wants to make a new Supra. Toyota, huge car company, massive profit margins, very successful. Nobody's having a problem and is worried about Toyota. They don't want to spend the money to develop a new straight six for the Supra. So they go to BMW, who makes straight sixes, and they get a good engine, and they co-develop the current Supra, which we're glad to have. I don't care who makes the parts numbers. It doesn't matter to me. That's a really good car, okay? And BMW got the Z4 out of it. Mazda went and made themselves a brand new straight six.
Yeah.
What is little tiny Mazda doing that Toyota said, no, we can't handle that. Mazda went, oh, we'll do that. Mazda made a new straight six. Now, Mazda's not big. Mazda's smaller than Nissan or BMW, or certainly smaller than
or
Toyota.
Or Honda. They're tiny.
So Mazda made a new straight six, which brings me back to something you and I said in our first CX-90 review. We're about to do another one with a different version. What else is that engine going to go in? What is Mazda planning?
Many
because they
things.
Didn't, they didn't make that engine just for the CX-90.
Right.
But I'm fascinated by the fact that here's Nissan, who is a large company with a big footprint and an even bigger parent that can't get enough money to do things like little tiny Mazda is doing, making a straight six. And not only is little tiny Mazda doing it, but Toyota looked at it and went, we're not spending that money. Nissan's going to have some serious investment, and it's not going to come from buying Fisker, in order, I'm sorry, in order to turn this ship.
They already have the partnership. The company is called Renault.
I know. I'm well aware.
Renault has a long, successful racing history in just about every category of racing you can name. And they already have that partnership in place. But I was always skeptical, not just from a cultural standpoint, but about the two brands. When those two hooked up, it's never been a smooth relationship. Mm-hmm, it's never produced the fruit that I believe Carlos was one of the first. Carlos Ghosn was one of the first to introduce that relationship.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right.
Nevertheless, I never saw the synergy.
Mm-hmm.
Going, you two hooked up?
We've all had that, those friends where it's like, wait, what just happened? You're kidding, right? Yeah.
You two got matched?
Yeah.
How is that?
Yeah,
no.
For sure.
How is that possible? And here we are still dealing with the fallout of former CEO Carlos, but also with too many people trying to be in charge and there's not enough resources. There's not enough money to allocate towards every program. I don't think that Nissan needs as large of a lineup as they have.
Mm.
I think they do need to pare back. I mean, they pared back their Titan. That's gone.
True. Yeah, yeah.
Apple got rid of their Titan and so did Nissan. You realize that?
That means that's available. Fisker can get the Titan. They're looking for things they can get the IP for. The Fisker Titan.
Goody.
I don't
and
know what
Nissan's
that is.
Nissan's going to acquire
it. It's
going to
be the Fisker. The Fisker electric bus is now called the Titan.
What a wrong decision on the part of Nissan. I know they didn't call Matt. They didn't call you. They didn't call us.
True.
They didn't call any of us listening. I realize that. But at its face value, what are these executives doing?
Well, but Nissan,
I'm not seeing a synergy.
I agree. And Nissan is in a weird spot because Nissan is a brand with a storied history in enthusiast cars and race cars. And right now, in their lineup, they have the aging GTR, which in 09, it's old. It's 15 years old, folks.
Yeah.
In 09, okay, follow me. The GTR did to drag racing and other car companies what the Tesla Plaid did 5-6 years later, where it was the car that nobody expected that threw down and beat everything. And there was, and this was early on
it
in
was
the YouTube
a sucker
plague.
Punch to everybody.
As soon as the GTR dropped, there were a million early drag race videos of GTR versus blank. Now it's all Cybertruck versus, but it was all GTR versus, and GTR took them all down.
Mm-hmm.
It was affordable. It kept, by the way, it's now more than twice as expensive as it was the day it was released. If you get a new one, it's like 160 grand now, and it was 70 when it was first released. Remember, it was 70 grand.
And everybody was like, look at the performance for value. The value is gone, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Well, because they couldn't make it for that.
Still there.
But the point is, though, it's been around for 15 years. It was a throwdown to their credit in technology, in performance, in capability, in price.
Yes.
It was a complete and utter put the industry on notice.
Yes.
15 years ago. And my question is, that's a storied name, just like the Z is. What happens to the GTR? Because if you're going to replace the current one, the R35, you want to replace that with an R36, it can't be a warmed over R35 like you just did with the Z. And in order to do that throwdown, you have to have throwdown money. This is a tough spot for Nissan.
Yes, I think they need to pare back dramatically on their product portfolio. But they're trying to do too much with the tie-up with Fisker. Nissan already has a tie-up with Renault and Mitsubishi, and now you're looking over here at Fisker?
Mm.
What are you, bored, Nissan? all of this is just not enough to deal with? You guys are so bored, you're courting Fisker now?
And what's Mitsubishi make? They make nothing we care about.
I saw an Outlander.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that need to exist?
Because you can get great deals on them.
That's the only reason.
Because Mitsubishi has a great storied history as well.
They do. Anyway. Somebody should buy Mitsubishi and just do Evo 11s for the rest of time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're celebrating the new year with new products from Griot's Garage. Wintertime means you might be stuck inside, but you can still clean your car with Ceramic Rinseless Wash. It lifts dirt, grime, and contaminants, and it leaves behind a ceramic shield that enhances water beading and self-cleaning ability.
But if you are getting out the hose, Griot's now offers car wash pods. Just like the pods you use for the clothes washer, you drop one of these in your wash bucket for the perfect amount of soap. These car wash pods even work with your foaming sprayers too.
Or if your winter project has faded trim, or you need to protect the trim on your car, try Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer that renews those old trim pieces and is good for tires too. Plus, there's plastic all-in-one to remove fine scratches and swirl marks and restores dull plastic surfaces.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Our car debate today is very interesting. It's from Will, writing into us from Chicago. And he's a young listener. He's been listening for a few years. He has bought a long-term dream car. In fact, it goes further. He bought a dream car, not only a dream car for him, but a dream car for his father that his father never bought. He bought himself a 1992 Corvette, that is the C4 Corvette, late in the C4 lineup. The C4 was till about 96. He bought it in March of 2021 when he was 20 years old. He bought it for 60,000 miles, close to mint condition, automatic, which was the only thing he didn't love about it, for $6,800. He is now 23 years old, and the debate is about this car.
Will's got a 2019 Escape Titanium that is his daily. It's provided by his work for personal and business use, all expenses paid, unlimited miles. Mm. So the Corvette is only for fun, like it should be. Will's always dreamed of owning a Corvette since he was little. I like that we have a I've wanted a Corvette since I was little and you're only 23 story.
Yes. And he went ahead and did it. And it's also because, again, his dad wanted to own one forever but never made the move. And you have gone out and done it, Will. This is the power of car suggestion. I love this. It's great.
Amazing. By the time Will bought it in 2021, he had worked at his company for 3 years. He worked during school and saved a significant amount of money to justify being able to throw some money away on a Corvette.
Love it. $6,800 is nothing, by the way.
That is fantastically well bought. He found this one less than an hour away from him, and it was within his budget at the time. He preferred to buy a manual transmission, but they trade for a premium. Most were about $11,000 around me when he was searching. And so this car, besides not having a manual transmission, was everything else he wanted. He sent photos. It's gorgeous. So he took the dive and he purchased it. Still to this day, he doesn't regret buying it because it's his pride and joy, and his favorite thing to drive and work on when it's not winter because of the suburbs of Chicago.
Sure, yes. Mm-hmm.
It's been mostly reliable, but being a 32-year-old car, he's also spent at minimum $4,000 sorting it over the past 3 years. The only mods he's done are C6 front calipers and slotted rotors, stainless steel brake lines at all four corners, DOT4 brake fluid, an exhaust, and LED headlights in the pop-ups.
Very cool.
This dilemma he hinted at is that he's itching for a manual. He wants more engagement for the car. He's learned to have fun with a 4-speed automatic, and he says by manually selecting the gears with the slap shift, as he's heard people call it. Yes.
Okay. All right.
At the end of the day, he's still bugged by the lack of a third pedal. He's also interested in tracking the car to experience more driving engagement, but he's also heard the automatic is not ideal for the track and can overheat and cause problems.
Yikes. Okay.
He's refrained from tracking it due to the transmission and also just general worry about something breaking. It's noteworthy he lives 5 minutes away from Audubon Country Club in Joliet, Illinois, so this is a particular shame given how convenient it would be for him to go.
That's
if
cool.
If only we knew somebody that operated track days.
An Audubon Country Club is actually really cool, but yes.
He's never been on track, he's never done autocross, and never been to any driving schools.
Okay.
May we recommend Hooked on Driving?
Yes, may we. We will. Yes, we have, in fact.
He's thought about selling his car and buying a similar Corvette with a manual. But he hasn't done that yet because he's already invested significant money to sort this one, and he loves the color combination and the mods. He also doesn't want to risk buying another used car with unknown issues and spend even more money sorting a new car. And the last reason is he's become slightly attached because this is his first sports car. He only wants a Corvette that's 1992 or newer, given that the older C4s and late C3s are a little bit lacking in the horsepower department.
Sure, yeah, okay.
He's open to other generations, C5, C6, but again, price is a consideration. So the maximum budget he could get or muster up is $15,000, including selling his current car. Hopefully it's worth about $9,000. You've made money on it already, but actually not because of the mods that you put into it.
Sure, yeah.
But if he uses that full budget of $15,000, he wouldn't have much room for sorting the car if there's any problems that arise. So it would be more comfortable to buy something slightly cheaper to have some maintenance money still left over in his bank account. So he's asking our advice. He loves his car, but doesn't know if he can be happy with it being his forever car because he's always itching for a manual. So what do we think? Should he keep the car he's invested so much time and money in and just enjoy it? Or take the jump and sell it for a manual Corvette to scratch the itch?
Well, there's so much good stuff here. First off, I want to really applaud you for buying this car. Whatever happens from here on out, I applaud you for buying this car and for making it yours and for loving it and actually driving it. I think that is wonderful. I also want to note a couple things. You and I have said many, many times, and this is not a hard and fast rule, we said many, many times, if you buy a car for less than 10 grand, in the first few years, you're going to spend enough on that car that you probably should have just bought a car worth 10 grand.
Right.
Our friend Will here bought a Corvette for $6,800.
Yes.
He has since put $4,000 into it, which, to be honest with you, now you can look at that two ways. $4,000 is a large percentage chunk of how much you spent on the car originally. But to be honest with you, $6,800 in the last few years, you put another $4,000 into it. I think you've done phenomenally well.
I do too. Will, I don't think you're done with your car yet.
Really? Okay, keep going.
Based on what you've written, you're almost listing reasons that you say are reasons to buy the manual car, but they're actually reasons for you to hang on to your current one.
Okay.
I'm reading between the lines. I may be wrong here. I just don't think you're done with your current car, and that's okay. You've certainly extracted the most you can out of it, but I know you're up against the point of not wanting to go further and risk breakage, damage, more money out of your bank account. I want you to get on track. I want you to be on track in that car, but you know what? I want you to be on track ultimately in a car that you'll trust because you're not going to get very much out of that track day. If you don't trust the car that you're in, you're going to be backing off and you're going to always be thinking about your transmission and you're not going to be learning the race line. You're not going to be learning technique. I want you to feel confident in your car. Now, I can caveat that by saying everybody who you and I have told so far about Hooked on Driving has said, you mean I could just take whatever car I have on track? And we say, yes, bring whatever it is you drive.
Yep.
But here, Will, I'm sensing hesitation because you just don't want anything to go wrong. And I don't want to say, yeah, go for it. And then, oh man, broken transmission or something overheated or some other problem was caused. So it's up to you to start saving, Will. And I know you're already doing that, but I love that you bought this because of your dad. Mm-hmm. And I know you're already making memories and you're sharing it with him. I love that. But it doesn't seem to be the right time quite yet because if we tell you to squeeze and sell this car, okay, $9,000, but you're still out some money and then get into something manual because I want you to get a C5 or C6. That's the natural next step, especially for track use. They're practically bulletproof and you don't have to do much, especially to, for example, a C5 Z06. But they are probably double, if not slightly more than that for what you're looking at to get into it. I want you to have that, but I don't sense that you're there quite yet. You could sell it. You could invest that money. You could save it. But then you're going to be out a fun car. You'll be
cruising around
in that whatever silver thing that you got. The company silver box.
At least it's paid for.
With wheels.
The Escape Titanium. I'm sure it's in silver.
I know that is valuable. I mean, your job is valuable. And to have that car is, you know, not piling the miles on your other one. I know that, but I'm really trying to find a balance for you because I don't feel like you're ready to sell this one. You're not done with it yet, but you're not quite ready to buy the new one yet and invest and say, okay, I had fun with that car. leave the memories and leave that behind. I sold it. Happy new owner. Blessings. And I know that in my heart, I'm giving the new owner a good car. I didn't just cover it up with some Maserati maintenance technique by actually ignoring it is really the...
Oh, that's the technique.
The whole technique
got
is just...
It. Got it. It's just you ignore it. Yeah,
don't
got
acknowledge it.
It.
Just completely don't mention it. I want you to have something new, but I don't feel like the time is right quite yet.
Interesting. That's very, very astute of you, Paul. I took a different tack here, but Will, I want to unpack a little bit because I really appreciate what Paul's saying. And that made me have this thought. While you were sharing that, Paul, I had this thought. Will, you're in Chicago. Not a lot of amazing roads in Chicago. You have a real attachment to this car already. And your dad is part of the reason. This summer, you and your dad need to take a road trip. I'm talking with overnights in your Corvette.
That's a great idea.
Don't track it. Go down to like Ohio. Find those good roads. There's the Triple Nickel. There's the area by Hocking Hills. There's a lot of roads in Ohio you can look up. There's some great roads down there. Do you want to go as far as Tale of the Dragon? I mean, maybe. But my point is, you and your dad, a couple night road trip where you actually stop and like make it a thing in that car, because I want to come around to something you said that I want to push on a bit. You say in your last paragraph, you're not sure if you can be happy with this being your forever car. Will, you're 23.
You're 23, yeah.
You're talking about a $6,800 1992 automatic Corvette to have in your life forever. No, I'm sorry. No, I just, there's a lot of cars out there. Now, I'll flip it around. If you were a person at the age of 23 who was a tech billionaire and you had nothing but money and time and cash, then keep your $6,800 Corvette that was the first thing you bought. But if you live in reality with the rest of us, okay, you admit right up front, this was so close to the one you wanted. I'll give you directly from my life. I always wanted a 300ZX. Always wanted one.
Yeah.
Finally got one in LA, my original NA automatic. I wanted a turbo manual. I still had that car from almost 10 years. I got rid of it when it was still painful to get rid of it, but I got rid of it when the time was right. I moved to Utah. The car needed to stay in LA. It made sense. I didn't make any money on it. I lost money on it, but there it went. I didn't know another one was coming around, but when the next one came around, it was the right one.
There was some time in between those
there was.
Two.
I had
about
to let it go.
A decade, right?
Just about, almost. So here's the other thing I want you to think about, Will. Your entire email, you're 23, you're only buying Corvettes. There is never an acknowledgement in this email that you'd ever buy anything else. So I'm coming in with drive homework. I'm actually going to align with Paul. I don't think this vet goes away yet, but I don't think it sticks around too long. I think it's maybe got about another year. And this is why I'm saying go have an adventure in that car with your dad so you can put a real moment connected to that car so you can be prepared to release it. And then the secondary part, and maybe, I'm just throwing out an idea here, maybe when you and your dad take this road trip, you each take a car. I'm just thinking out loud here, because what I want you to do is I want you to drive, probably through Turo, an MX-5 ND2. The current Miata ND2 in manual, and a GT86, the first gen 86. Second gen, if you can find it. But I'm just thinking about the fact that early MX5, well, the NC all day long, maybe even the NDs, are we're talking 15, 20 grand for those cars. The GT86 is 15 grand. You're only talking Corvettes. You haven't entertained anything else. You need to drive other things. And I want you to drive the Miata and the 86 because I want you to experience what it's like when you cut the weight and the power. Because I know what you're saying. Well, those are small cars without a V8. Yes, they are, but they're small cars. And your V8 is 300 horsepower, which is not nothing, but it's not huge. 300 horsepower now is in all kinds of things.
And it makes power very differently than other 300 horsepower kinds of cars.
Totally. It's a 3,200, 3,300-pound, 300 horsepower car, which is fine, but that's not remarkable. Go drive something lightweight just to broaden your horizons, because I think then you might be looking for something more than just Corvettes, because candidly, you should be looking at more than just Corvettes. There's a lot of great cars out there. You're 23. I don't think this car goes yet, but I want you looking to educate yourself for when it does, because I think maybe a year.
That's really good. Will, I'm going to add a BMW 2 Series just for some different flavor.
Yes, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
It's so different. I think that would be a bit eye-opening. And we suggest all this drive homework so you know what you like mm-hmm. and what you don't like, and you have that in your hip pocket before you
Absolutely.
Go searching.
Absolutely.
And then you've got that experience, because we get a lot of letters about asking, how do you get experience in other cars? And much of the time, it's right up against when you need a new car.
Excellent point.
Or you really yes. have decided this one goes, or it's out of my life and mm-hmm, I need to sell mm-hmm. it. And I'm really anxious for what's next. And I want to have something back in my life really quickly. And I can't take the time to bake the cake. I'm in a rush. How do I get the experience really quick? You do have time.
That's very good.
And yeah. I do like the year thing. Yeah, I didn't quite have a qualifier on how long, but I knew he's not ready to let it go yet. But it could be sooner than we think.
And I think you need an adventure to hang that car on, to really go, I had this car and I did this with it. You've had fun drives, but do something big with your dad.
That's great. Will, thank you for writing. If you've got a debate, just like Will's, write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Or if you don't, Topic Tuesdays, Car Conclusions, or any other kind of debate, write to us.
Lots of great questions as always. Thank you, guys. I'm going to start here. Ted Adam Green has a question that leads right into a Topic Tuesday, but I'm going to try to be brief. He says, is Toyota partnering with Tesla to get through this awkward phase of EV development because they're buying credits, EV credits? Ted, here's the interesting thing that most people don't realize. This is how Tesla was solvent for a long time.
They still kind of are.
Because they only get credits, government credit. And I'll be honest, I don't know the minutia of how this works, but essentially an automaker, any automaker in the U.S. has to show a certain amount of kind of EV credit for the stuff in their fleet, has to have a certain amount of benefit to the environment, and EVs automatically get all the credit. So that's why you see things like a few years ago, there was the Aston Martin Signet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. An Io? The Toyota Io? It was this little tiny nothing smart car looking thing that they swathed in leather, and they only sold it to you with a DB11 because it was their offset for carbon credits. Okay. What happened here is Tesla, of course, because all they're selling is EVs, had all these credits. And for years before they were making any money off of cars, they were selling those credits to every game in town. Every car maker you can think of was buying credits. This is the weird thing about how all this works. They were buying credits so that the automakers like Dodge could go, no, we have EV credits right here that we bought from Tesla, but we can make Hellcats and then we'll give you our EV credits we bought from Tesla. So Tesla sold them for years. So this is not just a Toyota thing. It's happened for a while. You can dig in and find out much more information than I'm telling you here and much better information than I'm telling you here. But the key thing is all EV makers get these credits. Tesla is the king of the EV makers and they sold credits to everybody for all time. What's interesting is to watch now that the EV market is pulling back some, how Toyota, who for the last 4 or 5 years has endured slings and arrows for why aren't you guys all in on EV? And Toyota's gone, we don't really think the market's ready, but we make lots of hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
And now Toyota looks like they knew something nobody else did.
Toyota IQ, making you smarter with every drive, right?
No.
IQ.
Or Signet.
Now,
if you've ever seen a Signet in person, please send us an email. I've only ever seen a photo.
Jake's on a plane on Instagram asks, what do we think is more important for spirited driving, brake feel or brake performance? Well, certainly for spirited driving, hands down, brake performance is absolutely more important. You need high performance for braking when you're doing spirited driving.
Yes.
Brake feel can imply a lack of performance.
True.
If the brake feel is there with performance, I say brake feel all the time. But I say performance is really what you need just from a safety standpoint.
I agree with that, but I come back, and I wonder if this question comes from this. I come back to all of our MC20 commentary we recently had.
Mm-hmm.
Those brakes were phenomenal, but the feel was terrible, and they were hard to work with. And so that undermined my confidence as a driver.
It did. You're absolutely right.
And there's no way to
But
to define
that
this.
Car backed up the performance, whereas this could imply that many other cars would not back up the performance and still have good feel.
I agree.
And the performance like, deep into the pedal might not be there. That's how I took it.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we can unpack this a few ways. Like the original FRS GT86 did not have very good brakes. You had to be on them early. Okay? But the pedal feel, meaning where are the brakes? How do I find them? was fine. So you could learn that the car didn't have good brakes and you better brake early. The MC20, phenomenal brakes, but I had trouble finding them on the pedal. What is the preference there? I would say this. Some people will talk about nuance to the brake pedal. I don't need nuance. I don't. I just need to know that
you need it when you're racing for brake bias. That's the time you need nuance.
I just need to know that when I put pressure on the pedal, that the pads are touching something. And in the MC20, because some people describe brakes as being wooden. I've had this experience. I had my brakes glaze in the Lotus, and it was the most wooden pedal feel I've ever encountered. I got new pads and rotors, power stop pads on there. It feels great and also stops well, which is helpful. I'm not really that concerned with the quality of the pedal feel as long as I know when I brush it, the brakes touched. And in the MC20, they didn't. It was like, brush the pedal and there was nothing. I got to go deeper. There was still nothing. I went deeper again, and now it was like, the brakes were like, oh, seriously? You want to really brake? I was like, no. I just wanted to brush the brakes.
Okay, all things being equal, Jake, I will say brake feel, but that implies that the performance is there to back up the feel.
I see what you're saying. I get your point.
But if the feel is dead and there's a lot of performance there, I would err towards performance first, because you can have all the brake feel in the world. And if you're coming in too hot and you've overcooked something, I've got great feel and the power just isn't there.
I could feel that the car's not going to stop.
Yeah, that's a big problem. So I suppose it depends on the car. Your sure. MC20 is a valid point, but it had carbon ceramics.
It's an extreme example.
And it could back it up
absolutely
with its performance, but in the span of a centimeter.
nothing, everything.
All of the brakes.
Seriously, it's Osman writes in and says he's a Fiesta ST owner. Congratulations, in his early 30s, who's starting to feel his age in his lower back. Apparently, the Fiesta ST is not doing it for you there. He said his attainable dream car is the Macan GTS, but still a few years away. So purely hypothetically, what would we recommend as a midpoint between the Fiesta ST's hair-on-fire driving experience and the Macan's comfort? Interesting question. Also, may I recommend some stretches for your lower back?
Indeed,
I mean, there's
yes,
that. Yes. This is going on. I forget. It's going to depend on what seats you have, because I remember the seats varied on that car. I think the Recaros, if I remember correctly, were super aggressive, and the standard seats felt like they needed a little more. So there's a big discussion there as well. I like the Macan a lot. I think it might be really good for you. Let me recommend a used Mercedes AMG GLA 45.
That's good.
Because those aren't that expensive now. You can probably get one of those for a song. That's a possibility. You could go with a GTI. That almost feels like a little bit of a middle ground between the Hair on Fire, the Fiesta ST, and the Macan. The Macan's going to feel a little more interesting, but the GTI is certainly not bad. That's a good middle ground there as well. Do you want to go a little more Hair on Fire? You could lean toward a Veloster N. It's not quite as nuts as the Fiesta ST. It's not as refined as the Macan.
Jorge on Instagram says, top five for adult new or used sub $60,000 do-it-alls. Have a manual and rear-wheel drive that doesn't look like a Malibu. That would be great. Even then, the SS seems awesome, but he's never driven the manual or one with MagnaRide. You got to experience that MagnaRide.
MagnaRide's good for sure.
Quite
yeah.
good. The problem with this market is nobody is introducing four-door sedans with manuals anymore that are rear-wheel drive.
Hardly any rear-wheel drive ones for that matter.
They're all front-wheel drive, like the Civic Type R, and that's really good. But the Civic Type R does change a lot because of how good it is. Mm-hmm. It actually, you start to appreciate the car for what it is and the fact that you could get a lot of enjoyment out of it. The problem is they're 60,000 and under. But otherwise, we're going backwards in time. We're going used to all the Pontiac G8s and SSs and all that kind of stuff.
That's practically a topic Tuesday. I want to sit down and you want to make a list.
Does this mean the car market is back to normal, though?
Things have settled a lot. We need to have a conversation about best cars from each manufacturer. We did that years ago. We need to do it again. Bob McCormick is saying on Facebook, for each of us, what's one driving skill we want to improve? Well, first off, Bob, I will say this, and I've talked about it with you, I've talked about it with Chance, but I realize it very much. I love driving. I know it's not a surprise to anybody. I like driving fast. I like driving on track. I would have made a terrible race driver because I'm never 100% thinking about making the car go as fast as possible. I am always aware that if something happens, it affects our business, it affects our ability to get cars, it affects the financials of the reality, it affects the fact that what if I'm injured, then what does that do to stuff? I have a family. I am always somewhat aware of that reality. And that's okay, But the thing I've always found interesting is the fact that guys that are really good racing drivers are able to strap into the seat and turn all that off. They are just worried about as fast as possible. And that's not necessarily a skill I want, but I've connected with the fact that I'm
headspace.
Not yeah. that guy.
Yeah.
But Bob, to your question, I would, my simple answer is I'd like to get better at all of it. I know that I am not nearly the driver I could be, but to your actual question, I wish I had somewhere to drift regularly because I like it and I'm okay at it. Actually, I'm decent at it. I just like to have somewhere where I'm not going to get in trouble and I could bring any car on the planet and just play with drifting and have the ability to go off and spin and kick up the grass over there and need new tires over here. That's something because it's that edge of complete loss of control. And it doesn't even, here's the thing you have to understand when you see people drifting, Chris Harris, the best example, in slow-mo, they might not be going all that fast. Mm-hmm. That might be a 20-mile-an-hour corner that just looks really cool.
Yeah.
I've thoroughly enjoyed any time I've had those really good drifts, and I've had some. Generally, we don't do them on camera because on public service streets is a bit of a problem. But this is why I'd like to have a place to do it where I could just play with it for fun and get it wrong a lot, which I would do.
I want to get better of all of it. We just got to keep doing it.
Absolutely. Yep.
Another reminder that we will be in Monterey March 9th and 10th, 2024. Yep. And we're inviting you to a Cars and Coffee Sunday morning, March 10th, 2024, from 9 to 11 at Laguna Seca in the main paddock. Come find us. Bring your favorite non-alcoholic beverage. We'd love to see you there.
Please remember that that is the morning of daylight savings changeover. Your phone is obviously smart. Remember the days when your phone didn't update or nothing updated in the house and you woke up in the morning and were like, what time is it? Your phone will catch
it for
you.
And then you realize you're late for whatever
yes,
it is.
But still, that's when we'll be there. We'll be there in the new time.
We're looking forward to next time. As always, cheers, everyone.